worldtalkradio.com, the World Talk Radio Network, where the world comes to talk. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the World Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Some people expect solutions to be expensive to be effective. This is not true. Everyone needs somebody who can be supportive and a guide. You'll find the answers you're looking for and the tools to both find answers and offer solutions on the Dr. Melanie Show. Now, here's your host, Dr. Melanie Barton.
Hello, welcome to the Dr. Melanie Show. I'm glad that you all have tuned in today. My guest today is Ken Wells. I want to give you a little bit of background as to why I have invited him to be my guest. I wrote a document for churches to help them to try to define just what sexual addiction is and to know what the options are for treating such a situation. I've asked Ken to come and be my guest to answer some questions about treatment and to offer hope to those who've been affected by this addiction. If there's time at the end of our interview, then you listeners can call in with your questions or comments, or you can email them to www.thedrmelanieshow.com. Let me give you some background on Ken so you'll know just how talented he is. He has a master's, and he is a licensed professional counselor. He's worked at Psychological Counseling Services in Scottsdale, Arizona since 1996. He's a certified sexual addiction specialist, and his focus has been treating wounded clergy and congregations. He's been ordained since 1980 and has pastored congregations for 23 years. He's conducted numerous workshops and has been an international plenary speaker at various workshops and conferences. He's also authored numerous journal articles for professional publication. He's been married to his wife Eileen since 1976. He has three adult sons. So Ken, welcome to the show today. Thanks for agreeing to be my guest.
It's my privilege to be here. I'm excited to share and to support this awareness of a malady that has affected all aspects of our culture and society, the church included. So any way I can be of help and directive about this vital issue, it's a privilege to be a part of this program.
Well, thank you, Ken. Could we start out by you please defining just what is sexual addiction?
You know, that's a great question, because people certainly want to know about how can one really be sexually addicted. And there are many different definitions out that talk about sexual addiction. And for me, I kind of go back to what I learned back originally about addictions in general. And it, basically, sexual addiction is a mood. It's kind of an unhealthy response to a mood-altering behavioral experience. And what I know is there are a number of characteristics that fit sexual addiction, and so we try to help people look at areas of their life around their sexual behavior that are out of control, places where people are going against their values and they can't stop. It's not, you know, historically, it parallels so much about what other people think of other addictions, and I remember hearing the question a lot, how many affairs do you have before you're a sex addict? And,
right.
Really what it is, it's more about the pattern rather than the quantity. So, for example, if someone is acting out against their values one time, does that make them an addict? No. But if that process becomes problematic and the behavior is out of control and the individual can't stop, then likely there's a sexual addictive compulsive problem that needs to be addressed. So it's looking at that mood-altering experience that gets out of control that brings in to focus this concern around sexual addiction.
Okay. Do you find that people who have the sexual addiction have obsessive compulsive traits in other areas?
Well, by very nature of its behavior, compulsive behavior, such as an individual who chronically masturbates, perhaps uses that for medication, perhaps uses that as a way of as a sleep aid even. In that regard, by very nature, it becomes very compulsive. So in and of itself, it is a compulsive, obsessive-compulsive behavior. And it is common for that to show up in other aspects of their life. And so we want to take time to really evaluate the nature of their compulsive behavior to see where it surfaces in other aspects of their life. So we do look for that.
Okay. I know that many of the clients that I have treated over the years who had a drug or alcohol problem, often when they got into recovery for that, then the sexual addiction would show up. And I'm wondering if you find that to be true also.
Sure. When we treat sexual addiction, that's what I do every day here at Psychological Counseling Services. Almost every individual who comes in for treatment is for that purpose. And what we know is if we try to single out one particular compulsive behavior, such as sex behavior that's hurtful, and we don't treat the other aspects of challenge, whether it be gambling, whether it be alcohol or other drugs, then we're going to miss a critical component that will fuel relapse, because we talk about an addictive interaction component that needs to be looked at. So as you just said, Dr. Malley, is that one obsessive behavior can trigger another. And so it's important to treat all compulsive behaviors.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us the different ways that the addiction might present itself? You mentioned, you know, excessive masturbation, but can you mention some other ways that the addiction might show up?
Well, sure. I think what's common is in a relationship is that there's a lot of, you know, we live in a culture that's pretty well saturated with an influence toward sexual behaviors, a lot of emphasis around fantasy. And what we find oftentimes is an individual who is challenged with sexual addiction, they may be stuck in a fantasy life, preferring that fantasy life whereby they can be in charge. For instance, a lot of fantasy centers around pornography that is so easily accessible these days through the Internet. And one can focus there with regard to the fantasy, find sexual fulfillment in a way they can control that they do not have to be involved with as it relates to their partner, be it marriage partner or whoever that significant other is. And what we find is that this fantasy life takes over their life and becomes a real intimacy disabler in the marriage. We use that term a lot, intimacy disabling, because effectively that's what this problem creates, is an intimacy disability for self toward others. So that's one piece. We have problems with, I have treated an individual who went 60 hours consecutive looking at Internet pornography without stopping. We have a number of people. We have people who have numerous affairs going on at the same time, a number of fetishes, body parts, objectification, whereby individuals are prolific and focused for hours and can't stop. So those are some of the dynamics, multiple partners, anonymous sex, intrusive sex, whereby, you know, people can even, one thing we look for is that even when there's intrusive sexualized humor into conversations, in and of itself, it doesn't mean there's an addiction, but it can be a signal that we listen to. So there are a number of different ways that people act out with their sexual behaviors.
And one of the things that I found in couples I've worked with is you talk about the fantasy life, and what I've discovered is that even during the sexual act with the spouse, many of those people are in their own head, not even present in the sexual act with the spouse, but they're in their own little fantasy world.
Well, that's really true. And, you know, people, you know, we hear this a lot where clients will come in, and they'll ask, well, doesn't everybody have a fantasy life. And it isn't so much about fantasy can be very healthy in a marriage relationship, but what you mentioned is a very unhealthy pattern that we find so common with sexual addicts, whereby they are role-playing with their partner while they're somewhere else in their head fulfilling a pornographic fantasy that they've seen on the Internet. And sometimes, with the component of codependency, there's pressure put on the partner to fulfill and role-play what that fantasy is that the person has who is addicted to the Internet pornography. So it gets to be real collusion effort, and it becomes a really an unhealthy dynamic between two people.
I agree, and I've seen this so much in clergy families, because we're talking specifically about that today, that the spouse is so ashamed and afraid that the truth is going to come out, so they'll do anything to try to appease the person to keep everything under wraps. And as we know, that doesn't work.
Well, that's so true. And I think when we're talking specifically around the relationship with clergy, there's such an expectation for that family to create an image that they have a wonderful intimacy life, even though so often in the church we don't talk about healthy sexual intimacy. It's assumed out there among congregation that the pastor and wife should, or a partner should, very clearly have that relationship going. But the truth of it is, in so many of our pastors and clergy people don't have that kind of intimacy, and what happens is they play out a fantasy, they play out a role play, and it just fuels a double life that certainly has proven to be lethal.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have seen so many pastors that are out of touch with their own needs because they don't have time or make the time to take care of themselves. They're workaholics, they're very charismatic. I don't mean in the religious sense, but I mean in a outgoing, gregarious personality type. And they don't make the time to develop intimacy with the spouse because they're always giving to everybody else.
Yes, and you know, we've done a lot of work with clergy, and what we find out to be a real common theme is that there's this theme of deprivation that fuels entitlement within the life of a clergy person, so that they feel entitled to be rewarded. Even though it's against their values, there's so much neediness that is represented in their life that is not being met. And it's interesting, there's a couple gentlemen, Dr. Mark Laser and Dr. Richard Irons, they did some study around clergy, and they found out that many of these clergy persons who are wounded, who are acting out sexually in addiction, come from family backgrounds that are characterized by rigid dysfunction with themes of abuse and neglect were present, had very little insight into their own personal issues, a very limited amount of training into the adverse effects, transference and countertransference, all the things that happen with pastoral counseling, very little training or education about sexual abuse, and they just failed to appreciate their own personal history of their own trauma that created the wounding. So all of that fuels a theme of deprivation that actually does create workaholism, create blurring sexual boundaries, or I'm sorry, just professional boundaries that create sexual behaviors that are hurtful and need to be addressed.
I find in any kind of helping professional that there are the majority of people who are trying to get their own needs met, but they don't even know that because they haven't dealt with whatever their own personal issues are, and it shows up in their interactions with whoever they're trying to help.
Exactly. And when we're talking about the ministry, it's so critical that during the formation stage of these pastors that we work carefully to help them identify what that woundedness is. My bias is that we all have been wounded. The critical thing is, am I able to recognize and to identify what that woundedness is and to be able to address it in a mature way so that when I am to play this multiple role of what is responsible for a pastor, I can do it from a position of strength and health.
It's time for us to go to a break, and we'll pick up on that thought when we come back.
Listen.
The world is talking. The World Talk Radio Variety Channel. To succeed in life today, you have to respond well to change and be willing to take chances. On Star Style, be the star you are. The Oprah of the airwaves, Cynthia Bryan, and her sidekick, daughter Heather Brittany, deliver lessons of success spanning the generations with live interviews with trailblazers, authors, and experts. Join Cynthia Bryan and Heather Brittany on the Power Hour. Star Style, be the star you are. Every Thursday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on World Talk Variety. For positive, uplifting, life-changing talk radio, it's Star Style. Be the star you are.
Never say never. Live your dream.
In Sue McDaniel's book, I Am Heart, she talks about feelings. Now, Sue is ready to bring her book, blogs, and topics of interest to the World Talk Radio Variety Channel. I Am Heart will discuss concepts and ideas that affect all of us and will provide experts and solutions to help everyone. Sue, speaking through I Am Heart, will answer your questions, share your answers, and learn together with you. Each program will have topics you've suggested, homework to learn about yourself, and moments of connection. Tune in to I Am Heart, Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, on World Talk Radio Variety.
You're listening to the World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-613-1612. That's 1-866-613-1612. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Thank you for coming back with us. I have Ken Wells, our guest host today. And we're talking about clergy and sexual addiction. And Ken, I cut you off at the break. If you remember where you are, if you want to complete that thought, we can pick up where you were, or we can start on a different topic.
Well, I think I'm just thinking about the clergy and the dilemma. The church is such a vital part of our culture, and the system and the setup for clergy to live healthy is so unrealistic, and so many times what happens for these men and women who so much want to live their faith and guide people to meaningful, purposeful living, they're in an environment that just embraces what seems improbable and ignores obvious, things that are obvious in their life, and it just sets them up to live a double life, and I know that double life will ultimately fuel the addictive pattern that happens in so many ways. We're talking about sexual addiction, and that's a grave concern that needs to be addressed, not only the individual, but also helping the system that fuels these behaviors.
And I agree, and I know in seminary years ago, there wasn't any preparation about the practicalities of how you survive in the parish, and there wasn't any helping at that point in time for the spouses to know how to exist in their role.
Well, that's so true. And
it's very stressful.
Right. My sense would be is that that's the importance of training. Now, your listeners should know that I too am an ordained minister with training with a master's in divinity and went to the seminary. And there was never any discussion about what it meant to live a balanced life. There's no discussion about transference versus countertransference.
Can you explain those terms to people who may not understand what they are, please?
Well, sure. The transference piece is what happens in any counseling environment when a parishioner comes and we're sitting and talking, and they begin to transfer a lot of the issues that are unresolved from their lives, family of origin, their ongoing current life. They transfer that in over into the pastor who's doing the counseling. And the countertransference is that what gets stirred up in me as pastor when I'm listening to a parishioner tell their story, and that can play itself out in a very hurtful way to the parishioner, because that is the nature of trigger that creates boundary crossing. And if I don't really know about that, then it renders me in a place where I can't be helpful because I'm reacting to what this person is telling me.
Right.
This person may project onto me, which we expect, but if I'm not, if I haven't received any training in that area, then naturally I'm not going to be able to handle that dynamic. And there just wasn't a lot of training in that area during my seminary training on experience. And then just what does it mean to have a healthy sexual experience? Many pastors are taught abstinence prior to marriage, and then all of a sudden they're in the marital experience, and they're assumed to have wonderful sexual experiences, and it just isn't true. And
there's not any time. I mean, there's no set job hours. I mean, you're on call 24/7.
That's right. And unlike other professions, as I am a professional counselor, very clear boundaries are established. I don't have dual relationships. It's unethical to do such as a counselor, but not so as a pastor. He or she is expected to play a number of roles whereby I'm counseling one person, preaching at them, at the same time knowing that here's a group of people who can make decisions that can cost me my job as it relates to withholding their money, whatever the issue is. And the pastor has to be able to play all those roles and bring a congregation together. And it's very intimidating at times.
Right. What I tell pastors over the years of my career is that I do not recommend that you see a parishioner for counseling more than to do a crisis thing, not more than three times, because you will lose that parishioner. Because if you ever preach on that topic, that parishioner is going to think you're talking about their situation.
Right.
And it's just not a healthy thing to do.
Right. There are a number of issues around that, and knowing and understanding professional boundaries is important. And what we find is that there's just these setups for failure in a relationship, because the pastor is expected to be the role model, and so many times, even though it's been encouraged, we work with pastors all over the world, encouraged to have accountability. The reality is that the system is structured such that if I do struggle in my sexual life, privately, personally, I'm struggling with pornography, there's really nowhere to go that's safe. If I go to my adjudicatory official, there's a likelihood I can lose my job. And so guys usually fight that quiet war within by themselves. And what we know is that a number of pastors, a big percentage of pastors, is my experience, struggles with looking at pornography. I believe that most pastors have seen pornography on the internet, and
I believe
it's an ongoing challenge with many, and it's still being unaddressed, and not a good system.
Let me read you some statistics in the paper that I researched. In a survey that was done in the year 2000 by Zogby, the poll said 32% of men said they visited a sexually oriented site, and nearly half of them were in committed relationships. And then in December of 2001, the magazine Christianity Today says that 51% of pastors say that cyber porn is a possible temptation. 37% say it's a current struggle.
Right. And that's assuming everybody is telling on themselves, which we know.
Right, right. And then in the book called Beside Still Water, which has to do with pastors taking time for themselves and sabbaticals, it says there's a conservative estimate that 10% of professionals, including clergy, violate the boundaries of their professional responsibilities every year by having sex with their congregants or clients.
Sure.
This involves over 400,000 women in a year, and because most offenders are male, that's where they were guesstimating, and they said most are repeat offenders, so that could come up to a figure of 1 million women. And if any of this group of women were to band together, can you imagine the damage financially and spiritually that it would do to churches?
Oh, absolutely. And that's all in the background of our culture. I mean, our culture encourages what I consider a theme of domination, whereby men are encouraged to objectify in a very demeaning way women. And out of that context, when I treat sexual addicted pastors, one of the things I do is I do a thorough sexual history where I identify the triggers, the build-up behaviors, the distortions, the catalytic events in their life, unhealthy behavior patterns, and I ask them to evaluate the cultural influence in their life. What is it have they learned from culture about how to treat a woman from that context? When sexual addiction is heterosexual dynamic, and it is appalling to know the kind of things that have been learned, is that it's just okay to sexualize and see women as genitals as opposed to a whole person who is an unrepeatable miracle of God. Pastors are no different than they're influenced by the culture, and it's a serious issue that needs to be addressed. And it seems that many church systems, though they speak out to the issue of concern, there's not an embracing of treatment. It's still focused on primarily a character, moral issue versus an illness that needs to be treated.
I agree. And for many of the pastors that I've talked to, the difficulty is they spend numerous hours on the computer researching for sermons and Bible studies. And for most of that time, they don't account for their time to anyone.
Right. And that's truly the challenges that we uncover as we do the histories of these pastors. Isolation is a huge issue. A lack of accountability in that isolation and unstructured time is mm-hmm. critical. And so we ask our pastors to realign their life and to change their pattern of living so that there is accountability. Accountability where we talk the raw dynamic of temptation, because we found out that if you could just put it out there in safe places, then that sharing and telling on yourself alone will lower the obsessive compulsive behavior and the possibility of acting out. So that's one component. It's really important for pastors to really understand.
All right. Well, let's take our next break and we'll come back and talk more.
The World Talk Radio Variety Channel, where the world comes to talk.
If you are looking to get started or are currently operating a home-based business, you might be looking for answers. What are the risks? What business should I get started in? How will I market my business? How do I balance my professional life with my other life? For answers, you need to tune into the Home-Based Business Show with Helene Leontzos. Each week, we'll bring you a step-by-step practical guide to starting and maintaining your home-based business. Listen every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time, on the World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
Are you a student? Maybe you've just started going back to school or are thinking about it. If you're interested in adult education, tune in to Learning as an Adult with your host, John Steele. Our program will cover topics you can use if you're a current or future student in any learning environment. You can be learning online or in a classroom. Either way, John will help you with problems, issues, and concerns facing students every single day. Tune in to Learning as an Adult with John Steele every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
The chances are very high that you know a twin. More than two people in every 100 are born a twin or multiple. Society has sensationalized, revered, and even feared twinship. If you are a twin, want to be a twin, or have a twin within your close personal relationships, tune into Twin Talk with Dr. Mercy Runyon. You will learn about the mysteries and secrets shared between and about twins. These topics include stages of development, psychic experiences, health and relationships. Twin Talk, Fridays at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time, on the World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
The World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-613-1612. That's 1-866-613-1612. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Hello, you're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show, and our guest today is Ken Wells, who is a licensed professional counselor, and our topic today is talking about clergy and sexual addiction. And at this point in the program, we're going to have Ken talk about how you treat clergy that have this problem.
Well, there's hope in that whole piece. I have people who come and think, well, I don't think I can ever change. And while I tell them, you know, the dynamic of sexual addiction isn't something that we know there to be, per se, a cure. While that being said, certainly there's a way in which I can live my life. Anyone can live their life who knows this sexual addiction offense-free, so they're not acting out against their values. So one of the first things we try to do is I just identified we need to get the train going down the track that's out of control. We need to get it stopped. So what we do is make interventions by setting up a behavioral sobriety contract is what we call it, where we identify what those behaviors are that are hurtful. We identify the high-risk situations and areas that fuel that hurtful behavior. And then if we're going to eliminate a destructive behavior, we need to put something positive back in. So we identify what those behaviors are in that order so they can have some degree of hope, and immediately we set up accountability, because most of these men or women who are coming in as clergy, they just don't have accountability. And then, of course, instantly surrounding all of this, is crisis. Generally, the congregation is in chaos. Families
because
in chaos.
This is because it has been found out.
Been found out, or even if it hasn't, there's still so much smoke, if you will, around.
Oh yes. Done, oh yes.
That have been contributed. So even though we don't know, it's almost like in a family we find out that the family knows what's not been spoken, but we've, in an unspoken way, have collaborated not to talk about it. So there's that collusion of secrecy, and yet underneath that, there's a lot of chaos. So we have to address that as well. And then we have benefited from our colleague and friend, who I think is a leader in the field. Well, he's considered to be the research leader in the field. Dr. Pat Carnes has created a 30-task model that we utilize and try to help each pastor begin to understand breakthrough denial, that's important, deception, minimization of their behaviors. We try to do our best to try to help them understand the origin of where this addiction came from. We try to help them understand their family of origin that contributed, not like as if my family of origin, my mother or father, are to blame for my behaviors, because I'm responsible for that, but rather to understand the influences. And what are what we call collateral indicators, experiences of my life that contribute to this whole dynamic. And so we
Ken, it
spend
sounds,
a lot of there.
It sounds like, Ken, this is a lot of intensive material to try to put into a small amount of time. How do you get all this done? Because they can't leave their congregation for extended periods of time.
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because that is a specialty and a niche that we've created through psychological counseling services. We have over 20 therapists here, and not only pastors, other individuals come as well. But when pastors come, we put them through 52 hours of therapy in 1 week. So effectively,
wow,
1 year of therapy in 1 week, and we take advantage of the combination of individual therapy, group therapy, and a multimodal approach to try to help break through denial, take advantage of the exhaustion, to help the person identify and look at their raw self and understand how they can rebuild their life. So we utilized that process, and we found it to accelerate clergy to a more workable place in their life where they can realize hope. While they don't leave here cured or their lives all put back together, they're taught how to put themselves back together and help to establish a solid program of recovery.
So what happens after that 52 hours? Do they go back home? Do they have aftercare? What happens?
Well, ideally what we work with is when a pastor will work with us, we try to work with the accountability people at home. If there's not accountability people, we try to establish that accountability, and then we help them to coordinate a follow-up program, including counsel, because ongoing counsel is necessary. Well, we know this process of healing in sexual addiction is a 3 to 5 year process, and obviously after that 1 week, they're getting started, just getting started. They're accelerated, and motivated, but they're just getting started. So we'd like to help them set up a solid base of counseling at home. A program, we believe in the 12 steps. 12 steps is fundamental to who we are. And we really encourage them to get involved in one of the 12-step community-based groups and find out if there's any therapist-led group there, because we know that therapist-led group we've researched, and it's been around 175 hours of therapist-led treatment is really advantageous for the clergy person. So we try to set that program up when they go home.
But the shame involved, if they're going to go to a group, because this I've seen in small towns, they have to keep the location quiet because they don't want people thinking, oh, we have, you know, sexual perpetrators meeting in our neighborhood. So how do you get them past that shame of at least going public to a group?
Well, one is they're immersed in treatment groups here, as well as community-based groups while they're in this treatment process. And two is that we work very hard to do a process that I call stalking the shame that binds me. And so really being able to know that I can trust my process of identifying the shame, being reasonable. We encourage our pastors not to park their brains to do therapy, but we like to think that when they go home, they can make valued choices. If, in fact, the person is far too well-known in that area, he may go to a neighboring community to attend a 12-step group. When there's no Sex Addicts Anonymous 12-step groups, we found individuals to gain a lot of help through Alcoholics Anonymous, working the steps to help them, just translating the issues for themselves. And then there's the wonder of the internet, because there are now online groups and there are telephone groups,
right,
that they can participate in. So we try to help them in that regard and hold their feet to the fire to recognize that getting at that basic core misbelief, Dr. Melanie, which is if you really know who I am on the inside, you'll reject me and you'll think I'm flawed and not worthy of love.
Right.
Leaning into that, going into a group, embracing the group, and seeing the group accept their truth is a powerful healing experience that we encourage all pastors to participate in.
What do you encourage people to have sponsors like you do in 12-step groups or a mentor to help them on their journey of recovery?
Absolutely. And we find that to be healthy. It's an interesting thing. In the church, it's almost, I hear pastors lament, well, the congregation wants me on a pedestal. While that's true, I've also found it to be true that the pastor wants to be there. So
yes.
that dynamic creates some real unhealthy relationships. So when that person goes into a community-based group, he's not considered pastor whoever, or she's not considered that. So what happens, we encourage them to get a sponsor. Doesn't have to be another pastor. It might be, but primarily a sponsor, and I become an individual who wants to be coachable, a person who wants to figure out how to live my life sanely and soberly. So we found that dynamic of sponsorship to be invaluable.
Mm-hmm. What percentage would you say it's men versus women that have this addiction problem?
Well, there's any question the vast majority of individuals are men, are male. And I think it's more about our culture because we live in a pretty male-dominated culture. And I think the culture encourages the context of men having the power, women not. While it's changing, in my judgment, a healthy way, the dynamic still exists. I'd also like to say that with the advent of the Internet, that we are seeing more women who are struggling with chat line on the Internet, who are addicted to that. We are treating female pastors with that challenge. And, of course, we're addressing men who are pastors who never had any kind of challenge previous to inappropriate sexual behaviors, who now are struggling and are hooked into this craze of Internet cyber porn.
Mm-hmm.
That's all new for us in the last, say, 10 years
right.
or less. So we're seeing a lot of that.
And it becomes progressive is what I found, is the excitement you get from what you watched last week, it doesn't do the same thing for you, and you keep increasing
right.
and taking more risks. And many are very glad when they're finally caught because they're exhausted financially, emotionally, spiritually, in all aspects.
Well, that's so true. And the very nature of the disease is I have to have more of what I'm doing, or I have to go to another level of risk, another level, and it, as you say, it escalates, and eventually it just becomes more and more out of control.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I wonder about the family members. Do you treat them as well?
Usually, the tragedy is that the pastor's family is oftentimes forgotten.
Yes.
Generally, this is true, my experience is that so many times if the pastor has crossed boundaries in a moral sense, and we're talking about sexual behaviors, then generally the church just wants the person to leave and be gone and to be done with it. There's usually a defensiveness, which is understandable, to try to take care of the church so against potential suit. And the least they hear from the family or the pastor, the better. Now,
mm-hmm.
that's difficult for the pastor. It's even more difficult for the family. We just treated a pastor and wife and family. And the wife, in this case, her entire social network was the church. And the judicatory officials asked her, though she didn't do anything wrong, asked her to cease going to that church and cease all contact. Well, that is extremely traumatic to that individual and to the children. So we do our best to try to help build support for the spouse, support for the children, so that they too can grieve and heal, because their life will not be the same again.
Right. And also for the victims, you know, often they're just shoved aside and there's no funds available to help them. And
That's so true.
Let's come back and discuss that after the break, okay?
Absolutely, we can do that.
All right, thank you.
The World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
where the world comes to listen and talk. Can you think of anybody who does not want a better life and to be a better person? Think about that for a second. Almost everyone wants to be better, but how does one go about doing that? One thing that is making people better every week is tuning in to the Self-Improvement Show with Dr. Irene Conlon. All real change comes from within, but many of us don't know where to find the information or guidance we need to make the changes that bring about the improvement. Most of us don't know how to work within. Listen Thursdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on World Talk Radio Variety.
Life navigation sounds simple enough, but it is really about harnessing the power of your own intuition to focus on the positive things in your life rather than the negative. Host Augustina Torgelson will help you to lead a happier life with less stress. Augustina's vision is to see a world of one community living in harmony with nature and earth. Embark on the journey of self-exploration and new opportunities. Tune in to Life Navigation every Tuesday at 8 a.m. U.S. Pacific Time on the World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
We all lead busy lives, and sometimes we think we can't take care of our health. We battle food addictions, time restrictions, and media conflictions when it comes to our health. Now, you can tune in to the Dare to Be Healthy show with host Alia Almoayed. Good health comes to those who dare to take the leap into the amazing world of natural healing. Find out what it's like to look and feel great, and finally live your life to its maximum potential. Let Alia and her guests show you how. Dare to Be Healthy is broadcast live Mondays at 11 a.m. U.S. Pacific Time on the World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
Listen.
Listen. The world is talking. The World Talk Radio Variety Channel.
You're listening to the Dr. Melanie Show with your host, Dr. Melanie Barton. To participate in our discussion this week, please call toll-free 1-866-613-1612. That's 1-866-613-1612. Or send an email to drmelaniebarton@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to the Dr. Melanie Show in the final segment of our first episode. Ken Wells, who is a licensed professional counselor, and I are talking about clergy and sexual addiction. And in this last segment of the program, if there's anybody that wants to call in and ask a question, we'll be glad to answer that. And until we hear about that, we're going to talk about what do you do about the victims, the people who have had the boundaries violated. What do we do about them, Ken?
Well, the nature, there was a day and time when victims who were ignored, victims who felt the injustice of the church just sweeping the behavior under the rug by blaming them and saying, well, they took down our pastor, this woman, this person, this, and it's not just a female thing, but this man, this woman has violated our pastor and have been ostracized. There's been a day and time when the victim primarily simply did not want to sue, is my experience, but more importantly, they wanted to be validated. They wanted to be feel heard. They wanted to see and know that this pastor who's violated them is confronted, dealt with, so that the behavior doesn't continue. However, in this age of that's very litigious, what happens is the fear of litigation comes such that is that the church becomes so conservative in their response back to the victim that it is what I do, what I think of is disclosure disaster. Once the behavior is disclosed, the lack of support and treatment to the victim is oftentimes even worse than what they felt before. And so that's a problem. But I think what we try to encourage is that there be advocacy for that victim in the congregation and mm-hmm. that there be an assigned outside party that would represent and support and advocate for that victim and his or her healing.
And what I did in the paper that I wrote, which was the guide of how church committees can handle these problems, I said there really needs to be a fund a victim fund set up to help pay for the counseling cost for the family of the pastor and also for the victim and the victim's families.
Well, exactly. And that's, and you know, in a wonderful way, there are churches, individual congregations, and a growing concern that's developing support in other even denominations that are doing just that, that are supplying support to the pastor's family, that are giving support, financial support for the council for the victim. But also there's that concerned secondary victim, the congregation, who when such behavior is known and the pastor is either fired, let go, or is at least on sabbatical for healing and treatment, there's the loss that takes place in the congregation. And there needs to be an advocate for the congregation as well, so that the congregation can talk out their feelings of loss and feelings mm-hmm. of what happened. So many times the congregation feels lied to because truth hasn't been spoken to them. And while that can be tricky as it relates to legal issues and not getting into a place where you actually fuel unhealthy suit or whatever, the reality is there's a way to communicate and share so that healing takes place with the congregation as well. So the congregation is all often overlooked, and then there's just not a focus of treatment of the system that collapsed,
right,
that ignored the obvious.
Because the church is a family system, yes.
Well, it sure is, and that family system needs to be addressed, and we find a lot of healing happens when that takes place within clergy sexual malfeasance.
And what I have read about is what's called the after pastor. This is the person who comes after this has happened, and research shows that person can only stay 5 years because the issues haven't been resolved. They might have been swept under the carpet and not talked about, but not resolved.
Well, I can relate to that because I was one of those after pastors who came into a church after there was sexual misconduct. And basically I was asked, me being then very naive, the judicatory leader said, all this church needs is you just put numbers on the board and grow that church, and that's all this church needs. Well, it wasn't but a year and a half later, that church was just became unraveled because of their anger toward judicatory, toward me. I was the messenger that was shot. And so I do know what that's like and how true you are. There needs to be a period of time for a pastor to come in to focus only on healing in the congregation.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody recognizes that they have a problem, or they suspect somebody does, how can they get in contact with your treatment center?
Well, there's a couple things I'd like to say. One is they can call us here at 480-947-5739. We certainly have our work on the Internet, and people can go onto our Internet source, which is www.pcsearl.com, and they can contact us, and we're set up and established where we can start treatment immediately, and we do that. We actually work 7 days a week here. We have a different staff that work in the weekend. That's one thing. But another thing they can do is, you know, there's a sexual addiction screen test that's on the Internet that can be taken. That can be so helpful just to find out, you know, is this issue that I'm looking at, is it an addiction or not? We benefit from Dr. Pat Carnes and his research with the sexual dependency inventory that is mm-hmm. so helpful that can really help me understand, am I a sex addict or not, if there's some kind of question. But I think always the individual needs to get to a counselor. They need a local counselor. We're specialists that can help people accelerate their treatment. We have the best results when we coordinate that treatment with a referring therapist in the area that the pastor or individual lives. And so we invite that, and we think that the wonderful news today is that there is hope, there is treatment, there is recovery.
Can you give your phone number one more time, please?
Yes, it's 480-947-5739. That's Psychological Counseling Services here in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona. So
Okay, I want to take the last couple of minutes to say about some things the church can do in the way of prevention. You know, you can have what we call safe boundary training, where you instruct church members on how to recognize problems, do things right. like have a window in the pastor's office so that nobody is behind closed doors without having access. I recommend that pastors have their calendar. It may have not say who they're counseling, but somebody needs to know what they're doing, that accountability.
Oh, sure. I would certainly, you know, think accountability is so critically important. My sense, you know, for nothing more than litigation, churches and judicatories across the country of all denominations are now beginning to screen for sex offending. They're screening for issues and training people about sexual abuse. All that's helpful in my sense.
All right. We need to finish up the program for today, but I appreciate you being my guest, and I hope you'll be willing to come back.
It'd be a delight. I've enjoyed being with you all, and hopefully pastors out there will find healing from this this tragic challenge that they're facing.
Thank you, and I hope you'll all join us next week.
Thank you so much for joining us this week for the Dr. Melanie Show. Please join your host, Dr. Melanie Barton, again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the World Talk Radio Variety Channel. We'll see you next week for another great program.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the World Talk Radio Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit worldtalkradio.com. The World Talk Radio Network, where the world comes to talk. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the World Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.